Okay, right. We'll take a 5-minute recess to make a panel substitution.
All right, this morning we only have one case on our 10:30 docket, Central Garden versus Vokes. You'll announce counsel, please.
I approve the court, Mr. Tom Myers and Mr. Kevin Dalton will argue for appellants, and Paul Mason will argue for appellees.
All right, Ms. Myers.
May it please the court. Kevin Duddleston and I are with the law firm of Littler Mendelson, and we're here today representing the appellant, Central Garden and Pet Company, on this accelerated appeal. Our client is appealing the trial court's order denying its request for a temporary injunction. Central presents two points of error to the court today for your consideration. The first point of error is that the trial court abused its discretion in arbitrarily applying California law to Central's unfair competition claims. The second point of error is that the trial court erred as a matter of law in failing to recognize the doctrine of probable disclosure under Texas law. Rather than bore the court with all the facts in this case, I'll just briefly cover the key facts relevant to the issues before the court today. Appellee Timothy Vokes was formerly employed by Appellee Doskasil for many years here in Arlington, Texas. He resigned from Doskasil back in December 2006 and accepted a position with Appellant Central as Senior Vice President of Sales and Trade Relations. It was the highest sales position at Central and the highest marketing position at Central. As a condition of his employment with Central, he executed a confidentiality agreement. That agreement contained several restrictive covenants, including a covenant not to compete, and an agreement to protect and refrain from using Central's confidential information and trade secrets. That agreement does not contain a choice of law provision. Mr. Vokes, about 18 months later in June 2008, resigned from Central and accepted a position again with Doskasil and also Aspen Pet Products. His new position with Doskasil and Aspen was Executive Vice President of Sales and Marketing. That position, just like his position with Central, was the highest sales position and the highest marketing position for both companies. The job duties at Doskasil and Aspen were virtually identical to what his job duties were at Central.
Now, what was his title before at Doskasil?
He was a sales rep. He was in sales. I don't want to represent to the court that his official title was sales representative, but it was something to that effect. Because Vokes' new employment with Doskasil and Aspen violated his confidentiality agreement with Central, Central filed lawsuit here in Texas against the appellees and applied for a temporary injunction to preserve the status quo pending a trial on the merits. This brings us to the first issue before the court. At that hearing on the temporary injunction, the trial court arbitrarily applied California law to Central's unfair competition claims. Well, we won't belabor the point that Texas law applies to the Texas common law torts that Central asserted in the claims, such as misappropriation of trade secrets and tortious interference. In addition to that, the court applied Texas law in analyzing the non-compete at issue here. The court did so despite the fact that the Texas Supreme Court has unequivocally stated that fundamental Texas public policy requires the application of Texas law when construing non-competes of employees in the state of Texas. Here we had a resident of Texas working for a Texas company, which was Doskasil, breaching his non-compete within the state of Texas. Despite the clear facts that Texas had the material or greater interest in the outcome of the non-compete claim, The court applied California law and declined to issue a temporary injunction. Texas Supreme Court in DeSantis versus Wackenhut, it's a very famous case, addressed a very similar issue, except in that case, there was a choice of law provision in the contract, And again, here there is not a choice of law provision in the non-compete. In fact, I have the agreements if the court would like to see them. The agreement indicates that the parties understood that the law of the state where the employee would reside would apply in analyzing the non-compete. Three different paragraphs mention the fact that certain paragraphs wouldn't apply if they weren't enforceable in the jurisdiction where the suit was brought.
What about the fact, though, I think you're referring to Exhibit B, which is the confidential information agreement. Exhibit A, which was the post-employment consulting agreement, in paragraph 14, says it should be governed and construed in accordance with California. Is it just because you're not asserting any claim under the post-employment consulting agreement?
That's correct, Justice Livingston. We are not suing. The Central has not sued appellees with respect to Exhibit A, only with respect to Exhibit B. And we absolutely recognize that there was a choice of law provision in Exhibit A, but there is not a choice of law provision in Exhibit B. And, in fact, the parties indicate that they intended to do otherwise.
And is, I haven't looked at the record yet, but the copy we have of Exhibit B doesn't seem to have a signature page. Is there a signed?
I do not believe that there is a signed confidentiality agreement in the record before this court. I do believe the record shows that Mr. Vokes admits to executing the agreement. And they discuss execution of the agreement in their response brief. With respect to the court's decision in applying California law, the reason the DeSantis versus Wackenkut case is so important and really shuts this case down is because there the court said even when there is a choice of law provision and the parties have indicated a desire to apply another state's law, in that case it was Florida, the fundamental policy of Texas is so important with respect to analyzing non-competes that it overrides the state's interest in honoring the agreement between the parties. Here, there was no choice of law provision in the contract. Now, appellees attempt to distinguish DeSantis by comparing the facts in the DeSantis case to the facts in this case here. Well, some of those facts are simply not supported by the record. For example, appellees assert that the contract was executed in the state of California. That is wholly unsupported by the record. What the record does show is that the day before the agreement was executed, Mr. Vokes was sending emails back and forth to someone in California. So the most likely scenario is that he was in Texas when he was sending those emails. Moreover, Central sent the offer letter with the exhibits, including the confidentiality agreement, to Mr. Vokes at his home in the state of Texas, in Arlington, Texas. So rather than rely on the facts that appellees cert in their response brief, we created our own comparison, and it's on page 4 of the reply brief if you wanted to follow along. But comparing the facts that DeSantis reviewed and the facts to this case, you'll see that they're very similar. In DeSantis, the location of the employment that was violating the non-compete was in Texas. Here, Mr. Vokes is violating his non-compete agreement in the state of Texas. In DeSantis, the location of the employer that was trying to enforce its non-compete was in Florida, and here our employer's in California. In DeSantis, the place of execution was Texas, most likely, and in here. Here in this case, it was likely Texas, but we just don't know. We certainly can't assume that it was in California. In DeSantis, the place of performance of the contract was in Texas, and here that's true too. And this is an important point. The contract that Mr. Vokes signed, the confidentiality agreement, is an executory contract. It's a post-employment contract addressing his obligations after the termination of his employment, not during his employment, meaning he is restricted from doing certain things after he left. In this case, he left and moved to Texas. He's restricted from doing certain things in the state of Texas. The current location of the employee, in both cases it was Texas. The place of negotiation of the contract, in DeSantis, it appears it was Texas. Here, again, the record's not clear, but the most likely scenario is that Mr. Vokes was in Texas and Central was in California. And finally, the location of the subject matter of the contract. That goes back to the fact that this is a post-employment agreement. Therefore, the location of the subject matter is what is Mr. Vokes doing after he terminated his employment with Central. Those activities are occurring here in the state of Texas. Appellees also argue that the error was not harmful, that the error was harmless, but that's also incorrect. First of all, whether the non-compete is enforceable was not before the trial court and should not be before this court. And that's under this court's own precedent in the Kent Anderson Concrete versus Nailing case, where this court held that that's not an issue before the court. We're here for the mere purpose of preserving the status quo. In addition to that, the Texas statute on non-competes requires the court to reform an unreasonable non-compete rather than not enforce it at all. We believe that the agreement is clearly enforceable and won't walk through the elements of that unless this court wishes to discuss that issue. So we'll move on to the second issue, was that the trial court erred as a matter of law in failing to recognize the doctrine of probable disclosure. Now, there's some discussion back and forth in the briefs trying to distinguish inevitable disclosure versus probable disclosure, but as we point out in our reply brief, that's an irrelevant mincing of words. They're the same thing, except for the fact that Texas applies this doctrine more liberally than most states. In other states, the courts look to whether the disclosure of confidential information would be inevitable, and in Texas, we merely looked to see whether the disclosure of confidential information would be probable. So it's an easier burden here. This court, on at least two occasions, and with a few of you sitting on these panels, has held that for probable disclosure, all you have to show is that the employee was in the possession of trade secrets and a position to use them, and the record clearly establishes both those facts. What the probable disclosure doctrine does is eliminate the need to prove that Mr. Vokes actually used that confidential information. We don't have to prove that here. Twice, in the Fox case that Justice Livingston, you drafted, and in the Bell Helicopter case that Justice Casey drafted with you, Justice Stofano, were on both panels, this court was clear. All you have to show is possession of the trade secrets and the fact that the employee is in a position to use those trade secrets, not that they did. Appellees also claim that there should not be a temporary injunction in the absence of a non-compete. And that, too, flies in the face of binding precedent in this court. This court has affirmed injunctive relief in the absence of non-competes. In the Fox case, Dallas did it in the Rugen case, and Dallas did it again in the Conley versus DCS case. It is acceptable to grant injunctive relief in the absence of a non-compete agreement. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Myers. Mr. Nason, did I say your name correctly?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, good.
May it please the court. My name is Paul Nason. I'm with the law firm of Locke, Lord, Bissell, and Liddell. We represent Appalese, Doskasil Manufacturing Company, and Aspen Pet Products in this appeal, along with my co-counsel, Larry McNamara, who is counsel for Appalee Timothy Vokes in this case. I am going to present a joint argument for our side. This is a simple case for your honors to review because there is simply no basis for a reversal of the trial court's decision. What fundamentally is at issue in this case is whether or not the trial court was correct in denying Central's request for a temporary injunction. The clear authority on the standard of review for a temporary injunction, whether it's granted or denied, is an abuse of discretion. As your honors know very well, abuse of discretion is a very high standard. If there's some evidence in the record to support the decision, then the decision should be upheld. Even if the court were to decide, perhaps they may have decided the issue differently, as long as there's evidence supporting the denial of the injunction, then such denial should be affirmed. And I will get to the issue of the choice of law and the probable disclosure doctrine in a minute, but what I want the court to really focus on is the evidence that was presented at the trial court level and the evidence that was not presented at the trial court level, so you can understand that in looking at whether or not an injunction was appropriate, it certainly was not, and the trial court was correct in their decision. There was evidence that there has been no misappropriation of trade secrets by Mr. Vokes, by Doskosil, by Aspen. There's been no use of confidential information or trade secrets of Central by Mr. Vokes, Doskosil, or Aspen. That Central has not been damaged in any way by Mr. Vokes' employment with Doskosil. There is no evidence of any business relationships that have been damaged. They have not lost a single customer since Mr. Vokes went to work for Doskosil. And they have no evidence of any conspiracy between Mr. Vokes and Doskosil. The court found that it is possible for Mr. Vokes to work at Doskosil without using Central's confidential information or trade secrets. And one thing that is very important for the court to understand is that before Mr. Vokes left Doskosil in December of 2006 to go to work for Central, he had worked at Doskosil for 22 years. He started in their credit department. After a couple years, he moved into sales. And for 20 years, he worked in sales for Doskosil. And the record will show Mr. Vokes' position at the time he left Doskosil to go to Central was vice president of sales. So Mr. Vokes was in charge of sales at Doskosil when he left to go to work for Central. He worked at Doskosil for 22 years. He left to go to Central, and he worked at Central for 18 months. He came back to Doskosil to be executive vice president of sales and marketing. So it's important for the court to understand that there's lots of argument about could there be probable disclosure and what's the appropriate standard and what position is Mr. Vokes in. But all of the cases cited and argued amongst the parties in the briefs, such as the Rugen case and the Fox case, all of those cases are different because in none of those cases did you have an instance like we have here, which is someone who worked for 22 years for an employer. That's how he can come back to them after 18 months and pick up where he left off and perform his job without using any confidential information of Central at all. And as the record showed and as the trial court found, as supported by substantial evidence, there's no evidence of use of the information. There's no evidence of misappropriation of the information. And importantly, there's no evidence of irreparable harm on the part of Central. They have not shown that fundamental element they have to show to establish their entitlement to an injunction. So even if on the issue of the choice of law, the important thing for the court to keep in mind on the choice of law is Mr. Vokes worked for Central in California. That is the fundamental distinction between the DeSantis case and this case. In the DeSantis case, Mr. DeSantis worked for Wackenhut as a security officer in Texas. Then he left his Texas employer to go to work for another Texas employer. In this case, Mr. Vokes was working in California for Central. The evidence shows as a condition of his employment, he was required to sign the offer letter, Exhibit A, and Exhibit B, the confidentiality agreement. Clear California law is that non-competition agreements, such as those contained in Sections 1 and 2 and 3 of Exhibit B of the confidentiality agreement, are invalid when signed. Invalid when signed. And so that is a fundamental distinction between the DeSantis case. If you're talking about place of performance, the non-compete that Central is seeking to enforce in this case arose out of the employment relationship that undoubtedly took place and undisputably took place in California. They recruited him to Texas, required as part of his employment that he relocate his family to California. They had him sign an offer letter for his California employment. That's where he worked the whole time. That is where, if he had access to confidential information and was given confidential information, it was in California. The legitimate interest that Central is presumably trying to protect in their litigation arose in California. In the DeSantis case, the Texas Supreme Court made clear that place of performance is an important issue. And Section 196 of the Restatement of Conflicts makes clear that when you're talking about contracts for personal services, the place of performance in the services and the rights that arise therefrom And where that happens should dictate which state's law should apply. And I think it's important when you're looking at the issue, because DeSantis weighs which state has a greater interest in the outcome of the litigation, which state has a more significant relationship to the parties, that when you're weighing that, in DeSantis, what you had is a case where someone had always worked in Texas, and he went to work for another Texas employer. And as it turned out, if Florida law had applied, the agreement would have been enforceable. The court ultimately decided that Texas law applied, and under Texas law, it was unenforceable. In this case, it is fundamentally, under California law, it is an unenforceable agreement. As recently as August of 2008, the California Supreme Court held in Edwards versus Arthur Anderson, as cited in our brief, that the agreement that Mr. Edwards signed prior to his employment with Arthur Anderson was invalid. That agreement was invalid. Section 16600 of the California Code holds that agreements in restraint of competition are void except in limited circumstances. So if you're talking about weighing the relative policy interests of the state, we would submit that it would offend the public policy of Texas to hold that Texas law, a Texas court should apply Texas law to make an agreement that when signed was invalid and void somehow spring to life because Mr. Vokes, fortuitously to Central, moved back to Texas instead of moving right across the street in Walnut Creek, California, where it is undoubtedly unenforceable. Central, in the record, you will see Central has conceded to the California Workforce Development Agency that in California, Sections 1 and 2 and 3 of the confidentiality agreement are unenforceable. They have admitted that to the state of California in September of 2008. Therefore, we would say that when you're balancing the interests of the state, DeSantis, the court was looking out for the Texas employee because under Texas law, the agreement would have been unenforceable and he would have been unfairly restrained from competing. In this case, if you don't apply California law, and I won't belabor the issue of the unenforceability under Texas law, although we think it is, the greater weight of the interest is that you're comparing the interests of states that have one has it fundamentally is void, it's invalid, it's illegal. On the issue of probable disclosure, we would submit that probable disclosure doctrine should not be applied in this case. As we submitted in our appellate brief, it is unclear that the issue has been preserved for appeal, but nevertheless, the court did find that Mr. Vokes could work at Doskosil without using the confidential information of Central. That is supported by substantial evidence on the record. And in all of the cases that are cited for the probable disclosure doctrine, including some decided by this court, if you read those cases and you look at the facts of those cases, they are so fundamentally different than a case like you have here. In none of those cases did the person work for 22 years, leave for a little bit, and then come back and basically pick up where they left off. What you had were people who go to work for their former employer, are trained in everything to do about either a particular industry or a particular product, and then take that information and leave and either start a competing business or take a job selling that specific product with a direct competitor. And in several of the cases, there's evidence of unclean hands and the use of confidential information and those things that just are not the case here. And so we would submit that the facts of the case under the probable disclosure doctrine make it clear that it is inapplicable in this case. On the issue, for instance, in discussing one of the cases that this very court has decided, in the Fox case. Fox case involved someone who worked for Tropical Warehouse, where they learned everything there was to learn about how to sell tropical fish. In that case, the former employer had one customer, Walmart, that was basically 99% of their client base. Employee learns everything there is to know about tropical fish, leaves Tropical Warehouse, goes to work, starts his own business, and starts trying to poach on Walmart, going directly after that client that is 99% of that customer base when he admitted everything he learned about that business and those products he learned at his former employer who was suing him. Nothing could be further from the truth in this case. You have Mr. Vokes, who, as I said, worked for 20 years in sales at Doskasil, had substantial and vast experience in the pet products industry and the customer relations and the relationships and who you sell to at Target and what products are being sold at Target by Doskasil and Aspen, and him coming back to Doskasil and Aspen in no way requires him to trade on any information of Central that he may have, and it's unclear from the trial court record what that information may be and whether it's even still live information or valuable information. There was clear testimony from the president of Central, Mr. Heim, that pricing data, cost of manufacturing, those types of things can change on a daily and weekly basis. Mr. Vokes himself testified at the temporary injunction hearing that at that time, some 3 months after he had left employment, he couldn't quote a price of any Central product. We believe that in this case, the probable disclosure doctrine should not apply. Now, finally, circling back to the fundamental issue before the court is whether or not the trial court abused its discretion in denying Central's request for a temporary injunction. Our position is that the clear evidence before the court as presented, we had testimony from Jim Heim, Central Pet Group's president, at the temporary injunction hearing, and he testified that Central had no evidence that Doskasil or Aspen had used any of Central's confidential information or trade secrets. They had no evidence of any conspiracy between Mr. Vokes, Doskasil, or Aspen. He had no evidence that any of their business relationships, and in fact, he testified their business relationships had not been damaged. Mr. Heim, their president, testified they had not lost a single customer and that there was no evidence that Mr. Vokes was using the confidential information and trade secrets of Central in his appointment. Yes, ma'am.
May I ask a question?
Yes, ma'am.
I notice you're using the present tense or past tense with respect to use, but what about future use? Isn't that what a temporary injunction is supposed to prevent? Is the possibility of future use?
Well,
or the probability of future use?
That is certainly possible, but in the context of deciding whether or not an injunction is appropriate and looking at the element of imminent irreparable harm, it is very probative and can support the denial of a request for injunction if at the time of the temporary injunction hearing, there's no evidence after he had been there for some back to Doskasil for some 3 months that there had been no evidence of any use of the information. And we would submit that it was clearly within the discretion of the trial court after listening to the testimony of Mr. Vokes and listening to the testimony of Mr. Heim to decide based on Mr. Vokes' substantial previous experience at Doskasil that it was possible for him to work at Doskasil/Aspen without using those confidential information and trade secrets. So our position would be that evidence of non-use, clear evidence of non-use, and in fact in the reciprocal lack of evidence of any use, when you're looking at it from an equitable standpoint and trying to decide has Central shown an entitlement to an injunction, we would submit it supported denial of the injunction. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Dettelson.
Thank you. May it please the court. So much to say in so little time. Let me just first start out by saying that it is a bedrock principle of our judicial system that trial courts are to follow binding precedent. And there is a Texas Supreme Court decision on this issue, has been on the books for 17 years. And to allow the trial court's decision in this case to stand would effectively permit the trial court to rewrite Texas jurisprudence as it relates to choice of law. The fallacy in Mr. Nason's argument, to really cut to the chase, is the appellee believes that this case rises and falls based on the enforceability of a non-compete agreement under California law. Absolutely untrue. The issue before this court is not whether or not that agreement is enforceable, not whether it should be enforced under Texas law, not whether California law recognizes the enforceability, but whether or not the court should have maintained the status quo on the issues of whether or not the trade secrets of the appellant were potentially compromised or could be compromised in the future. The binding precedent arising out of this court and courts across the state of Texas uniformly says, under the doctrine of probable disclosure, the mere threat of the use of that information is enough to enjoin further activity. The court need look no further than the fact that, by his own acknowledgement, as the record reflects, Mr. Vokes occupied the highest level positions at both companies. It's not as if we're taking a run-of-the-mill, low-level salesperson who may or may not have had access to information. The record is replete with evidence that Mr. Vokes had access to the highest level information in terms of marketing strategies, forecasting, comparing products, market information, all of that information. And there is no doubt that that is trade secret information. This court's decisions in the Bell Helicopter case, quote, threatened disclosure of the trade secrets constitutes irreparable harm as a matter of law. Mr. Nason tries to make a lot of hay out of the fact that we can't show any actual loss of customers or use of information. The problem with that argument is the probable disclosure is a gap filler. It says we don't have to show intent to use that information. All we have to show is you have an individual with the highest level of responsibility within an organization moving to another organization and the inability of the old employer to deprogram that information from his head. It is impossible for our client to do that. That is why we have the probable disclosure. Now, he says the real issue is, did the trial court make a mistake in not granting the injunction? Well, the real issue is, did the trial court make a mistake in applying the wrong law of the wrong state? The answer is yes. That point is reviewed de novo by this court. If this court concludes, as it should, based on the trial court's statement at the motion to transfer venue, where, by the way, he dismissed all of the arguments that 90% of the arguments that Mr. Nason just made, the court there at the end of the argument, without briefing and sua sponte, indicated that he intended to apply California law to every single cause of action. That's the reversible error. It should not apply to the Texas tort claims in this case, including the unfair competition and including the misappropriation of trade secrets, which we were attempting to enjoin. That's why the issue of the enforceability of the non-compete, apart from the case law that says that's not even an issue on appeal, shouldn't be before the court today. We're not talking about the enforceability of the non-compete. We're talking about misappropriation of trade secrets. And this court's own decisions in Bell Helicopter and Fox versus Tropical Warehouses says we are not required to prove they are actually using the information, only that the individual is in possession of the information and in a position to use it. We believe the DeSantis versus Wackenhut decision is clear. If you go through the factors, they all point in favor of this. The one key distinction there is the agreement in that case, the non-compete was part of an employment agreement. That's not true here. The non-compete agreement was a freestanding, underscore, emphasis, bold italics, executory agreement to be performed in the future. There is no way of knowing which state's law would control until Mr. Vokes left and went to work. That's why the court in that case had no choice, because if you look at the non-compete in that case, it specifically said he's precluded from competing in the 48 counties in South Texas. That's not the case here. We didn't know where he was going to work until he left and went to work for our competitor. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Duddleston. Ms. Myers and Mr. Nason, we appreciate all your arguments today. Thank you, Ms. McNamara, for being here as well. Your case is submitted, and that concludes our court for the 10:30 docket. If the clerk will please adjourn us.